Fight!
Welcome once again to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name's Nolan.
And this is episode 88 and you guys are in the same room.
We are. And this is not easy recording this. I thought this would be a breeze.
You're literally leaning forward one at a time to talk into the microphone.
No, sharing a microphone does not make for the highest quality podcast audio. So if things are a little shady, you're going to have to blame the fact that Nolan's putting up with me.
But sharing life makes it worth it.
I guess it's Kenny, so.
Yeah, so it's double worth it.
Questionable.
So E3 is next week, which is exciting for many people. There's tons of stuff that is on the possible horizon. Everybody likes to keep their cards close for the most part, but whether you are a Call of Duty fan or Destiny, you might get something special, or if you're into VR, there might even be new consoles. I don't think it's really the year for new consoles.
Nah.
Maybe you're hoping for something special like a new Metroid or a new Elder Scrolls. What are you two guys, what are you most excited about that might possibly be here?
That might be there, meaning it hasn't been announced. So,
yeah, it doesn't have to, but so, that could be a possibility.
Yeah, then Metroid, you said it. I have been wanting a quality Metroid title forever. Everyone has. The last good one we got was the Prime series on the GameCube, and that was a long time ago. And I think they missed their chance to make a great one on the Wii U. Because I still think that's a great system, and I love mine. But the Switch isn't too far off from the Wii U.
Right.
And so they still can utilize that screen, and like they can make an amazing Metroid. I would love a updated graphics platformer one. Or not platformer, but like the old school Metroid.
Yeah.
Like Super Metroid. I don't even have to have a 3D one. I want the Super Metroid with a new skin and a new story and gameplay.
When was the last one, Nolan?
I don't know the year, but it was, I don't know. They made, like, they started making, like, these weird, under the Metroid name, these not Metroid games
that
where you, like,
did not like.
No, that you, like, play multiplayer on DS where you, like, shoot your Mii characters. It's bad. It was bad.
That, it does sound terrible.
That sounds terrible.
Kenny, do you have any idea what might possibly be at E3?
No, I haven't stayed as with it as I sometimes do some years. And I don't want to accidentally spoil any like segue you've got coming up, but playing our game this week made me want a really immersive, really quality virtual reality like puzzle kind of game. Something that you can go in and just get lost in a world and have to just figure out what in the world is going on and get yourself out.
Have either of you seen some of the video footage that's been going up recently of the VR for Star Trek? You play with, it's multiplayer, you play with other people, and so you can see them interacting while you're in the cockpit. It's crazy. It's not immersive necessarily like you're talking about, Kenny, but we're moving that direction.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. It's definitely not there yet in my mind. We're still kind of first generation with all the VR stuff, and stuff really tends to hit its stride after you get to like a second generation of things. But I think we're going to get there soon, and I think it's going to catch on. More and more to some degree. It's always going to be a little bit niche, but it's a fun new area to explore.
Yeah. I don't know about my order of excitement. So there's probably going to be a Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer, which is going to be
hype.
Phenomenal. And then a new Assassin's Creed trailer, almost 100% sure. There's been leaks even yesterday that kind of finally confirmed that it is Egypt and that it is an origin story, that it is, you've got a kind of a 30-year-old assassin who already has some experience and that he's kind of founding the, like bringing the assassin order together. It's during Cleopatra's time. Like, you've got a lot of this. And then there's going to be, like, some... Supposedly, there's going to be even some, like, things where you go back even further to, like, Moses's Egypt, where you're an Israelite there, and the pieces of Eden help escape. Like, that is what I could potentially be most excited about, just depending on what they release.
That's a great premise. If they pull that off and do it well, it's going to be a great title in that series.
And they usually do. I mean, it's not my favorite series, but they really do it well. Ubisoft kind of nails the whole feel of the eras.
Yeah.
At least from what I understand. I haven't played them all, but like I played the pirate one, and man, that was a really, really good game.
Yeah, the complaints about that series has never been about necessarily the series as much as it's been about Ubisoft and just the terrible decisions they've made and releasing early and stuff like that. But what I could potentially be the most excited about is if there is an update on the Final Fantasy VII Remake.
It'll be an update being like 10 years from now.
Right, exactly.
We might have another trailer.
Exactly. But if there is something, I'm going to be so excited. Like if they say episode one's coming out this date, that's all I need with a little bit more footage, and I'll be so happy about that. If they don't, I'll be supremely disappointed, and we will probably just write it off as a missed opportunity. Myst is the game that we're playing this week, and join us as we talk about Myst.
Overview.
That was one of the most subtle, natural... It was stupid and it was a stretch, but one of the most, like, just flow through the segue moments that we've ever had. And I'm proud of you. You stepped up your game. Last week was a big, big miss.
Last week I felt bad about myself and I wanted to edit it out of the podcast entirely. So yeah. I felt like I had to do a little bit
of
work.
You really missed it last week.
Yeah.
I mean, it went smooth until you just went into that description of what we just did.
What, Kenny?
Yeah.
I'm trying to make it worse. I want us to get in the realm of a normal segue, which is kind of cringeworthy.
Kenny, just so you know, you've never listened to one of our episodes, but is what I do is I usually cut it off after my segue so that and go into the divider, the overview divider, so that people can think about how good that segue was, and then I let you usually have your dumb commentary. So...
Fine with it taking a little longer to get there. I don't mind.
We have a very big game this week. Myst was created by the Miller brothers. That's Robin and Rand Miller.
You know Robin and Rand?
Yeah, they're my best friends, actually. Duh. The Miller brothers. You know them. You know.
The Miller bros.
You know, they founded Scion Inc. Yeah, that was... Scion... is a company that developed Myst. It was published by Brunderbund in 93 for Macintosh, and we actually played a couple games on the podcast that Brunderbund has published, one being Load Runner. What?
I think you're saying it different each time. Brunderbund. Brunderbund, right?
I put an N in my notes, so it's Brunderbund today.
Yeah, I don't think
today.
There's an N there.
Brunderbund
no,
made...
No, you can't just keep changing it each time.
...made Load Runner and... Prince of Persia for the Apple II. So we have played a couple of those games on the podcast, Broder Doder, and now we're playing Myst, which is arguably one of the greatest PC games, depending on who you talk to and what time you're talking about. Fun fact, Cyan approached Activision when they were wanting to make this game and get it funded. And the Miller brothers before had been making kids games. So, like, I don't know what those games consisted of, but, like, I imagined the ones I played, which were, like, the math ones that have little mini games and just learning games for kids. And Activision saw their pitch for Myst and told them no and to stick to doing kids games. So they kind of insulted them. But luckily, Sunsoft picked them up later, and they agreed to fund the game and get it off the ground. So Myst was the best-selling PC game until 2002.
The Sims, right?
The Sims beat it, which we all know how large The Sims became.
Massive.
Like, massive, still is massive. Well, that last one was kind of a flop, but big deal.
It was, yeah.
Big deal. And so Myst... did something. They did something right. Myst is a puzzle adventure game. It's centered around a nonlinear story. You play as the Stranger, and you travel to different times, different ages, through fantasy worlds, through different themes, and you're trying to solve mysteries and puzzles to progress and to uncover more of this story. Now, it's a point and click.
Yeah, point and click adventure. So
point and click. Yeah.
Think Scooby-Doo. No, don't think Scooby-Doo.
No. Think Atlantis.
Think Atlantis.
Don't think either of those titles.
No, you've got to. It is very similar to Atlantis in its composition.
Sure, but like Atlantis would be like it's a point and click adventure. Think Myst. Like, we gotta keep our keep our order of operations and priority on what was good and what was bad and who was revolutionary and who wasn't here.
PEMDAS, yeah.
But for our viewers' reference, we've played Atlantis before we played Myst. And I'm sure at the time we definitely said something about
it. We definitely referenced
Myst. So we paid homage. Don't worry, Kenny. The graphics are stills, pretty much. I mean, you're navigating the world, but like you click and you that's how you move forward, by clicking, and you look at the world and you interact with objects by clicking, and you read and you forget important facts later that you should have wrote down or done something. The graphics, the Miller brothers actually wanted the graphics to be completely hand-drawn from the beginning, which I'm sure very quickly they realized was impossible for them to do, because that's a huge task. Because the world is really large. The game, like I said, is now considered a classic. It was a huge success at the time, so much so that it helped popularize CD-ROM drives, which we all know what CDs are. And obviously I'm speaking not about music ones, but like just for computer-wise, like floppy was a thing. But it really sold those drives, because people wanted a game on a disc that they could just load up and just have a huge game like that. And it really showcased what could be packaged in that software. The sequel, Riven, came out in 97, and many other games in the Myst series followed. So that's Myst. Big deal. I didn't really scratch the surface, but I'm sure we'll try to dig into it a little more.
Gameplay. So correct me if I'm wrong, but in my opinion, this game is very simplistic in its structure. Like, boiled down, you go to a new island and a new age is what they call it in the story. You solve a series of puzzles. You collect a blue page and a red page. You solve more puzzles to open a portal back to the Island of Myst. You insert the pages into their appropriate books, and then you rinse and repeat. You do that all over again with a new age, and you do that 4 or 5 different times, and then that's the game. Now, that's very, very simplistic way to put it, because it is actually much more in depth than that and will take eons of more time than that.
Yeah, I am actually really upset with myself. I tried to encourage us all to be purists this week and just like play the game raw.
Yeah.
And generally, I'm that guy, and I think that's the most fun way to play puzzle kind of games. And if we had had the entire summer to play through this game, that would have been great.
Yeah, we would have gotten through the first age.
Yeah, I literally think like playing casually like that, it would have taken me months playing somewhat consistently to get through this game, just because of the complexity of the puzzles, if you're not using something to kind of guide you through that process. And so saying it's fairly straightforward in, you know, hey, you start on this random island you don't know about, you explore around and figure out what's going on, and then from there get to go to these other places and continue these puzzles and new environments. Sounds really, really straightforward, but we're talking a pretty high level of complexity here.
And I feel like that's partially why it was so popular. Like the CD-ROM drive or whatever, people were like, all of this content is packed onto this disc. And it's an illusion almost, because like, I don't think the game is that intense, or at the time maybe it was, but like, I mean, it's a series of images and going through in a couple animations, not a couple, there's several, but like, it just felt like there's so much packed in there that people thought it was just revolutionary how much gameplay you could get out of it. And I think that's just like a nod to the brothers for like being able to add those gameplay elements.
So there really is so much content in the game. Some that is relevant to the puzzles and the mystery that you're trying to solve, but some that is completely irrelevant and just to fluff up the environment, which is actually very like inspiring. That's a cool thing to do. I really enjoy. What's really cool about Myst, one of the things, is that the environment and the worlds is a character. It reminded me of, in some vein, BioShock, and that BioShock is a world, and it's, you're wearing your BioShock shirt today.
I am.
The worlds that BioShock creates is a character that you're discovering and learning about, and that's what this game is, because you don't know anything about yourself. You don't even have a name, really, that you're known as the Stranger, and you don't even know much about why you're on this island. The game doesn't set up a story. It says you just ended up here on the island, and then it lets you do everything else. And so it gives you so much in the world through visuals, but through also reading books and through finding these different items that builds upon the character of the Island of Mist and the different ages you go to.
I'm glad you pointed out BioShock. I definitely was thinking BioShock some. Like, they definitely pulled from Mist and designing Rapture, you know? Like, just the way you go through it and find little details here that could help the gameplay, but also could just enhance the atmosphere. Really, really a standard for the genre. And like it makes its way into other genres. Like, it's just a good starting point for developers, I think, to just be inspired by a world creation. And the other thing that really enhanced the gameplay for me was the sound design. So, maybe some people would think it's dull not having like a soundtrack playing the entire time, but it's like atmospheric tones and like sound effects that I thought were really natural and helped immerse me into the world of Mist.
I think one of the best things the game did by far. It sounded absolutely amazing. And again, not heavy-handed, but just little bits of things. And the fact that you're having to even use sounds in some of the puzzles and you're interacting in that way where what you're hearing matters was such a wise decision. You guys aren't kidding, though. This really was the game that kind of ushered in a completely new era of PC gaming. I kind of remember that transition. I didn't play Myst much as a kid, but I did play some of Riven right after and kind of remember the results of this game being what it was and seeing how it really impacted what people were doing, and it was awesome. Dustin, you also talked about story and how it doesn't really start there, but they also do a really good job of developing some story kind of naturally as things go on. And in a sort of open world environment, they also leave the story a little bit open. You can get numerous endings based on which characters you listen to and whether you are influenced by those characters. There's a right ending and at least one wrong ending as well. And that's so amazing. Just those little details of complexity that they put in it.
Right. So there are different endings. There's one right ending and every other ending is a bad ending, by the way. So,
right.
But if you, the cool thing is that you're not going to be far off from the right ending if you choose a bad ending. So the way that it's set up is that to get any ending, you are two steps away from getting the right ending instead of that wrong ending. So
it's not a decision you made way back.
Right.
If you've been saving your game as you make progress and have a recent save, you can go back and make one key decision differently and get to see kind of all the different ways the game ends. So it's not punishing, but in terms of immersion, the fact that you can interact with those stories in that way and have that option, they just were really, really good about finding ways to let you immerse. And with the graphics not being good yet, that was hard to do then.
Yeah. And so we talked about this being a game where you're discovering the story as you progress. What we mean by that is that some games set the narrative at the beginning and then you follow that storyline. And it might shift on you and surprise you here and there, but Mist is non-linear in that you, in part, you create it as you play. You're dropped on the island and you begin discovering things through reading and through visuals that you are on an island where there's two, to go into the story just a little bit more, there's two brothers that are trapped in these books. One is a red book and one is a blue book. And you've got these transmissions that are fuzzy and that are cutting in and out, but you can tell that they're trapped and they need help and that you've got to go to different ages to collect pages to restore to the books to help free them. It's as simple as that. And so your home base is the Island of Mist, which I think the puzzles there are relatively easy compared to the rest of the game.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was gonna say, because those original ones are still hard.
Right. Well, they are still hard, but once you get up into that elevator and you're able to see out the window to a location and then see the key to that location, which is like a set of numbers or dates or pictures or whatever, and then you find somewhere else on the island where that corresponds and you input those, that then opens the portal to that age, that made sense.
Right.
At least at the start.
Yeah, once you figure out the kind of main shtick of that primary mist island, then it's just a matter of sort of going through the process of doing it there, but then completely new puzzles on each of the other ones. And so as you learned kind of the way the game functioned, it got a little easier because you knew what to expect in terms of how the puzzles worked, but they were still very, very diverse. And so there were still moments that you had to be writing stuff down or literally like skill-based kinds of things where you're like remembering a certain tone, like pitch, and then having to emulate that pitch, like walk across a room and hear it the same, and some pretty complex kinds of stuff for a game as somewhat straightforward as this. It had depth.
The first time I was really drawn into like the gameplay was the first age that I went to, the mechanical age.
Is that what you went to first?
Uh-huh.
Because you can go to any in any order.
Right. I went to the mechanical age first, and the music kicked in, because up until that point, it was pretty silent. There was some ocean noise, ambient noises, which are nice. I like those, and I think they pulled those off great. But a little track started playing once I got there, and I start seeing like torture chambers kind of and like steampunk stuff. And I was like, all right, this is kind of creepy, but also I want to know what's going on. So that was my first, like, that's when it clicked for me. I'll get into more of what I actually think about, you know, once we get to age, but that's when I was like, this is really impressive for the year that it came out.
I've got my phone, so instead of writing things down, I've just got a series of pictures that I've taken of different clues, and some of them are not even clues, like they looked like clues to me, so I took a picture of it, but I just filled my phone up with things that I might need to reference at a later time. So it was great that I took pictures of the constellations in the book, because you need that to be able to solve a puzzle, but then it wasn't important that I took a picture of like a windmill or something like that. It was very important that I took a picture of the piano with the notes that are highlighted. You've got to know what notes to play in what order. So yeah, so many clues and so much. It's crazy because you're given an overload of clues, and then you're like, you have to go find the puzzles the clues connect to.
Absolutely.
It's a lot.
You sometimes have to remember a clue you learned in a different age or on a different island somewhere else. And so you're having to kind of like remember some like meta narrative of like this world and how it works and what that means. And that's just, it's again, it's just amazingly complex for what it was. I love that you showed your phone though, Dustin, because that's such a reminder of how old this game actually
makes it
was.
So much
like
easier,
cell
right?
phones weren't even really a thing then, let alone like being able to just snap a picture and go back and remember your clue. And so it really reminds me of how far this game has come and how impressive it is that I can still feel immersed, even though the graphics are really, really basic. The interactions and the movement is something literally you could fit on one CD-ROM and an old, slow computer and still get that same kind of experience.
You'd have to go get your pictures developed at Walmart at a point and click or a point and shoot camera.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been kind to the game so far. Now let's get realistic about the puzzles, because with these games, this is my frustration with this genre, is that yes, some are intuitive. And I think these games are set up so that if you have enough patience and enough logic, that those are going to combine at some point and you're going to be able to solve puzzles. In this game, there are so many puzzles that are unintuitive, and it's not even puzzles, it's locations to find that you're just freaking clicking everywhere until a random crazy hidden door opens up that you can crawl under and find new things.
Absolutely, and we have to remember this was pre-internet. There was no minimizing your game, going to a second monitor and pulling up how to do it.
Right.
Like, it was you and your computer, and you had to figure it out. Enough so that they literally had, like, helplines to call in that were 900 numbers. Like, they were planning on making money.
Really?
On That's people great. Being frustrated with this game in the booklet, that they would call in and ask for help. And I guarantee you, they made some serious cash there, because there are places that this game just is hard. It's a, the problem with puzzles like this is either you get them or you just don't. Like, there's no middle ground. It's not, you don't even necessarily know if you're working on the right puzzle or finding the right clue. It's either something that, like, you make the connections and then can figure it out, or you're just milling about having no idea what to do next and exploring things, but that can be really, really frustrating.
I wonder if that line's still open. I can just see a guy in a room, like, cobwebs everywhere, and there's like the phone, and it finally rings, and he's like, "Yes, can I help you?" And they're like, "Is your refrigerator running?"
It's probably one of the Miller brothers.
They forwarded that number to their cell phone, and they just know the game so well that now once every 5 weeks, you know, when a podcast highlights the game and somebody tries that hard, they get one random phone call.
Yeah.
It'd make their day. I'd do it if I were them. Aged. So let's talk about the age of this game. Not the ages within this game.
Because
that's where you move from the main island to these other areas and you get the cool trees and everything. Let's talk about how well this game translated as a game that came out years ago to today.
All right. The gameplay we've talked about, it's still a point and click game. Now, for me, that's always been an issue, personally. I want to like the genre, and I definitely can appreciate games that are point and click. But it's just frustrating for me to sit for long periods of time and play through a story. One that is, especially one that is very obscure and that I'm having to discover, like, everything.
I disagree and agree. I can sit and enjoy a long story. I care nothing about the length of a story. I'd be all about an extremely long story. I love Final Fantasy series. Those are long stories. But my problem here is, look, with any games of this genre, I would love / hate to sit down and watch someone play it through blindly for the first time, because I honestly do not know if it is possible. And if it is, I'd imagine that it is insanely frustrating, so much so that it makes the game not fun.
You literally are talking, if you were to just time this game straight through someone who had already solved all the puzzles and was just playing it, you know, to like show the game, it would probably be hour and a half, 2 hours of gameplay.
It's two to three, because I think Antonin linked a video this week of a guy doing just that, 2 hours.
Okay, yeah, I was thinking right at about 2 hours. If you were to play it naturally, just the amount of times you would have to go explore somewhere and walk back and walk back and walk back, almost kind of what I whined about in Jurassic Park, but in like this terrible 3D environment, especially if you on a first play like haven't learned to use like the zip walk where you move around more quickly as you're walking and some of the other like gameplay smoothing features, you're putting in lots and lots of time. I would expect this game myself, if I was trying to play it as a purist, still needing two or three hints at some point, I think I would get stuck a few times. And I think if I tried the rest of the time, I think it would take me 30 to 40 hours.
Golly, 30 to 40.
Yeah, I have no faith in myself.
So let me ask you, Kenny. So Kenny, you really think through this. You think that given enough time with no hints, I know you mentioned two or three hints, but given enough time with no hints and all the patience in the world, do you think that you would be able to solve this game, to finish this game?
I think so, but I think it would take that amount of time. I think it would take, you know, like a lot of gameplay.
Well, that's, I remember not, playing, that's not a lot. I played Final Fantasy 7 70, 80 hours. Like, yeah, so 30, 40 is not a lot.
It may even take longer. I don't know. But I specifically remember playing Riven, like, as a kid, which is very similar. And I would, like, get to a new area and there would be a puzzle. And I remember spending sometimes 2 or 3 hours, a whole evening, exploring an area and clicking buttons and see how they interact and trying to work through a puzzle and sometimes getting frustrated and leaving and then coming back another night and working on that same area again. and finally finding the one thing that you hadn't found before and making a little bit of progress. And I only probably got halfway through that game, and it took me like weeks of play. Now, I wasn't sitting down and playing in huge chunks of time. That's not like how I gamed then, but I think it's doable. But you're talking way huge amounts of time and immersion to figure it out.
So where does the love for the game, like the game's very loved, where does that come from? Because it is it only the people who played it when it came out? Because you played Riven and you're still having issues.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the puzzles are unique. It's similar style, but like you're still figuring stuff out or you're not. I just think it was so revolutionary. I think the look was unique. I think the immersion and sound was so unique. I think what they were trying to do as a game was the first time anyone had experienced something like that. And when you get something that's just new and good, that just really, really connects with people. The fact that it was hard was just like there weren't a bunch of other games like this to play. And so I think people really did just sit down and lose themselves in this game. And even if it took them hours and hours and lots of frustration and a few calls to the 900 number or whatever, I think people did play it like that and enjoy it then.
All right, let's take a few steps back out of the depth now and just kind of throw out a few things of it either aged well in this area because of this or it didn't age well because of this. I think it didn't age well because for one reason, because when you find these pages and you get this holographic video of a real life person, the brothers are real life people, by the way, that are speaking and acting, which gives you more personality of the two brothers and kind of helps you figure out which one you're going to trust or either. They reminded me of Civilization 2 council actors.
Yes, they did.
Don't knock it like it's a bad thing. Civ 2 was awesome.
No, look, I liked the acting. I know it wasn't the best, but I mean, I thought
cheesy.
It was cheesy, but
bad,
the story, but... you know, they. I thought it was pretty good, and it was cool that it was like live action. It looked good.
It was a great choice to put a little bit in that in this fake world. It you can tell they had immersion in mind because it made it feel more realistic.
Yeah. In part, you felt like you were playing a movie or a series of television shows.
I thought world design aged well. I love fantasy worlds, and they kind of hit all the major like themes. So in gaming, like some games will take the steampunk approach. Some will take the just fantasy, just like magical approach. Stone Age, they hit a lot, and they pulled all of them off. They looked really pretty, and I felt immersed as far as like the world goes. So that was on par. That was perfect.
Yeah,
we've got to point out that at least on graphics, if you were playing today, because very few people are going to do like at least one of our viewers did this week and load up literally an old version of Mac OS so that they could play the original game raw.
Yeah.
You're probably playing some spectrum of a remake. There's a lot of different things available. And now some of them are very pure to keeping the same original look and graphics, but there's some very, very updated versions of this game that still give you the same gameplay, but in a like environment that lets you walk around freely and be in actual 3D and not just this one shot at a time kind of fake 3D. And so, depending, some of those natural hurdles of time have been kind of overcome just because people have liked this game enough that they have kept it current.
Yeah. So you've got Myst Masterpiece Edition, you've got Real Myst, and then you've got Real Myst Masterpiece Edition. Those are just three, and there are probably more remakes of the game, which they each have of their own graphic and gameplay updates and additions. Even one of those adds a new age that you go to. So if you want more puzzles, if the first edition is not enough for you, you've got an entirely new age in one of these remakes.
The final shell shock.
So do you give this game your vote for New Game Plus status, which is just our general thumbs up or thumbs down? Do we say go find a copy of this game, play it and enjoy it, or to reserve your time and use it for a different retro video game?
I've been going last a whole bunch, so I'll just jump in so that one of you guys can have more final input. I absolutely give this game a thumbs up for me. It is classic enough that it's worth just having in your gaming experience repertoire, if for no other reason. Some of the hurdles of playing have been overcome if you don't want to play it in its original format. And so some of those little things of just navigating the older environment and some of the things that could be a hang up in a game like this are tough. It's still a tough game, but you're not playing it today raw. If you don't want to be a purist and go in and take the time and pound your head through these puzzles and figuring them out yourself, you can still go through the experience of the game by following a fairly spoiler-free guide online that helps you figure things out. I think there is enough evolution that has come with this game as it has aged that any hurdles that there are overcome, and the importance of this game in gaming and the fun of immersing yourself into this world is worth it to me. I think it's a big title, and I think overall I would say, yeah, check it out, play it, figure it out. It may not be the most fun you have if you don't like puzzlers. It may drive you a little crazy, so maybe not for everyone, but as a general rule, I'm saying yeah.
I think that by far it is probably the best in its genre. We've played a few others, and I know of a few others. It's hard to do these right and to do these well with enough immersion that makes you feel like you're having fun on top of solving puzzles.
Yeah, at least in that time.
Yeah, how many are made today? I mean, this is a dying breed. This is not a genre that has a lot of longevity to it. It kind of filled a void. It filled a niche during the early 90s, and I think we faded away from that for good reason. I've got a real problem with these games. If you can solve puzzles logically, and if you can navigate through the world logically, even with trial and error, and even with having a lot of patience, then I'm for it. But almost every single one of these games, I hit a brick wall where I'm like, there's no, like, I try for a long time, then I finally read it, and I'm like, there's no way that someone's going to logically find that. They might accidentally stumble across it, but they're not logically going to find that. And as I mentioned earlier, with all the patience in the world, I am not sure that some of the puzzles in this game can be solved logically, which in turn means that you're not going to finish this game unless you use some outside hints, clues, or walkthroughs. If you have to use a walkthrough for a game, then I think that there was something that didn't happen correctly in the creation and formation of the game. So all that being said, I do think that if you're going to play any point-and-click adventure, let it be Myst, but I'm not going to give it my vote for New Game Plus status.
I hate point-and-click adventures. I can't even think of one that I'm just like, okay, that one gets a pass. And I haven't played all of them. But Myst was able to create a world that I could lose myself in enough that it almost made me forget I was playing a point-and-click.
Interesting.
It was frustrating. I'm not the best at logic puzzles. Especially bad when it comes to like remembering clues. So I should have used the smartphone technique that Dustin used. But through all that, I appreciate the crap out of a beautiful and well thought out world, graphically, musically, and just feel. And that is why I think Myst is legendary. That's why I think it was at the time, and why it still is, and why games should still look at Myst when they're being developed. So I do give it a New Game Plus.
And I've got no qualms with that. Like I said, I think that if you're going to play any point and click, this should be the one that you play. So that's 2/3 of the vote, which swings it to an affirmative. Yes, we give this game our vote for New Game Plus status. Some of our viewers emailed us or contacted us this week and let us know what they thought about the game. Trevor said, "My dad got me a Sega Saturn and Myst was among the games he chose. Needless to say, even after 20 years, I still haven't been able to figure out the game. But I still have the console and the game still works, which is weird because all the other games I have are all broken down and deteriorated. It's definitely a classic, but it's not my favorite by far."
It probably still works because we get frustrated and then turn it off and not play it. Like, the disc just hasn't worn out.
Right. Kenny, you said 30 to 40 hours. It took Trevor 20 years and he still hasn't been able to do it. Holden emailed us and he said, "Lame. I'm not exactly sure how else to describe this game. I'm not even sure how it was so notable when it was made. The game was just bad. I got maybe 10 minutes in and was bored out of my mind. Not to mention, without any guidance, it was pretty difficult to just stumble across the answers to your puzzles. So, admittedly, I stopped playing and just YouTubed the rest of the game. My conclusion was still that this game was pretty bad. Although I laughed out loud when your prize at the end was only the remaining books in the library. Spoilers. Overall, I didn't like this game and was disappointed that this was the game that I jumped back in on with you guys. Also, please don't give it the NGP seal of approval.
Well, surprise. I think that's the first time someone's begged us to not.
Yeah, sorry, Holden. But I get how this could be a game that's not somebody's cup of tea. You know, by all means, it's one of those games you should know for its influence. And if you like that type of game, you ought to play. But if the slow pace and the slow burn puzzles and the overcoming some of that frustration and that aha moment isn't going to do it for you, I get someone being like, it's not my jam.
One of the things that I will just note here at the end, we're usually done with our commentary by now, but it made me think that since I'm a story guy, I really do appreciate that there's enough given to you from context clues and conversations with both of the brothers that you should have an inkling of what to do and what not to do when the final decisions come at the end of the game.
Yeah, they do a good job with setting that up.
It's not ambiguous. It's enough to make you think, you know, I either can or cannot trust this person, which is really cool. At the end of our podcast, each and every week, we typically randomly select from our Retro Master list a new game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days.
But not this week.
We're not doing that this week. I know that's a bummer for some of you, for you, Kenny, because this is your favorite part of the week.
I get so hyped.
But guys, we are past due for another retro recap. What is that?
Retro recaps are basically a look back at the past. Should be 15 to 20 episodes, but in this case, we're
27.
So the last 30 episodes, we will briefly hit in the episode next week and talk about our favorite parts, our least favorite parts, funny moments. And it's a great jumping on point to the podcast if you're new, because you'll hear one, you'll be like, oh, I want to go listen to that one, or I will never listen to that one. So it's a fun time. I really enjoy them. It's just fun laughing at ourselves, however, 27 weeks later.
And it's kind of fun, like, with time passing and having more time to reflect on each of these games, really processing what we liked about it and what we didn't like about it, and whether we've had more like or dislike, whether we've continued to play any of these games at all. I'm excited to talk about the fact that, like, Tyrion keeps popping up in my mind and I have this weird urge to go back and play it, and I never expected that to be the case.
Save it for next week.
Yeah, so doing some of that retrospective is just a whole bunch of fun, and we love kind of sharing the big picture interaction with you guys and are looking forward to making sure we're all caught up together in a really fun kind of episode.
I know it's a bummer for some that we're not playing a new old game this week, but we're not stopping you from playing a new old game this week, and we can all still just chat on the daily in our Discord. We would love to direct you to there. If this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, join the actual family. Come into our Discord. It's a quick and easy program to download on your phone or on your computer, and then hop onto our Discord, and we talk weekly through different text threads about the game of the week, or some video game music we're listening to, or just about anything and everything. So make sure to hop on there. You can find the links on our social media, which is Facebook and or Twitter at NGP Podcast. You can listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, or any other podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so you're the first one to get new NGP episodes. And if you get a moment, leave a review on your preferred provider and let people know what you thought of NGP, especially if it's a good review. That will definitely get other people to find out about who we are.
Yeah, we always ask you guys to email in your thoughts on the game of the week, but since there's no game of the week, we would love your thoughts on those past 27 episodes, or not all of them, but just if you got something you want to point out, some question you want to ask us about how we felt about the games, any way you want us to interact as we kind of go over these games again, we would love to have you guys do that and just let us know your thoughts so that we can involve you in the conversation.
You can also visit us at patreon.com/NGP podcast so you can get some more information about behind the scenes, what we do. We've got some regular content that's coming out, and it always hits our Patreon page first. And then we've got some additional content that never comes to the public that is only for Patreon eyes and ears only. So you can find more information about that at patreon.com/NGP podcast.
Special thanks to Bradley and Zion, our core producers of New Game Plus. They help us to make every episode even better, and we love you guys, and we thank you for your support.
Join us next week for Retro Recap number 3. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm still Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this has been New Game Plus.